Welcome to Wyoming Stories. I'm Micah Schweitzer. This podcast brings you stories about Wyomingites in their own words. And this month, as the summer season peaks, we'll hear stories about nature and wildlife. We'll start with Charlie Thomas. Charlie lives in Jackson, and years ago, he worked for a local raft tour company on the Snake River. He recounts the company owner's against-all-odds attempts to deliver floatographs to his rafting customers.
Rod Lewis owned Lewis and Clark Rafting, and back in 1980, I started working for them, and I guess about 81 or so, Rod decided to start photographs. And the idea behind photographs was to take pictures of people rafting down the Snake, and then he would sell those pictures back to the people when they got done with their trip. So most of the time, he photographed the rafts from the opposite side of the river as the road was on. So he had to get the film back across the river. So he had all sorts of different ideas about how to get the film back across the river. And the idea was to get the film back to town before the customers showed up on the bus, so that when they stepped off the bus, voila, there were their pictures for sale. So Rod started out, his first idea was to get a guy on a motorcycle who was supposed to drive the film back into town. And so first they had to get the film across the river to the guy on the motorcycle. And initially he had all sorts of different schemes. He tried casting, having the photographers cast it across the river with a fishing rod, which didn't work. They couldn't get it all the way across. And then he tried having them tie it to an arrow and shoot it across the river. And they kept losing the film that way too. And so finally, then Rod strung a wire across the river, and they would put the film on a little pulley, and it would go, across on this wire. But then one day during high water, one of the other rafts coming down the river ended up, the guide snagged the cable and took the whole thing down. So that also failed. So then he decided that our number one job as guides was to make sure that film somehow got across the river. So the photographers would load up the film in this little plastic bag, this little floaty yellow bag. And when we came down, they would snap the pictures and then heave the film across out into the river. And we were supposed to somehow get the customers. These were U-paddle trips. And the people were paddling the raft. And we were supposed to get the people to turn the boat around and paddle back upstream to try to save this film that was floating down in the middle of the rapids. And needless to say, it wasn't working out very well. Rod, I remember one day Rod coming down, and he's angry with us because we'd lost yet another thing of film. And he's like, "What is the number one most important thing on the river?" And we're like, "Safety?" And he's, "No, it's the film! The film! Make sure the film gets..." And so none of it was working very well. And photographs, had a pretty bad record because mostly the people weren't able to see their pictures. So he didn't have that captive audience. So finally, one day, Rod came up with the idea of pigeons. And he decided he was going to take passenger pigeons. Well, he got these racing pigeons, and he was going to put the film on the racing pigeons. So all the money from Lewis and Clark, which was a profitable business, started going into these pigeons. And he built this pigeon coop. At the time they had this building moratorium. I think the height of the highest building in Jackson could only be two stories high. But Rod somehow managed to build on top of another building this pigeon coop that was three stories up, towering over everything in Jackson, was Rod's pigeon coop. And he spent oodles of money training these pigeons, and he would took them to California so they could have a warm place where they could practice all the pigeoning, and he had these schemes for the pigeons. He would starve them of food or of sex, and they would be so they would be motivated to fly back to the pigeon coop faster. And finally, you know, the day came when Rod was ready. He sewed these little jock straps for these pigeons where the film was supposed to be placed, and he was ready for the pigeons to make their maiden voyage. And so the photographers took these pigeons down to the river, and they took their pictures, and they put the film in the pigeon and flew it, sent it up in the air, and the pigeon just beelined towards Jackson. And apparently these things were fast. They would go like 60 miles an hour. They easily beat the bus back there. The people, as soon as they stepped off the bus, there was their picture. Sales were just roaring. It was a huge success. Everybody was excited. And then the Forest Service decided that they needed to plant some peregrine falcons along the river. Now, these racing pigeons are the fastest birds out there. The eagles can't keep up with them. The only thing that can catch a racing pigeon is a peregrine falcon. And all of a sudden, the Forest Service decided to plant these peregrine falcons along the river. So Rod, you know, he you know, at first didn't realize, know what was happening, but he was lost a couple of pigeons, and he couldn't figure out what was becoming of his pigeons. So he started, you know, going along the highway there and tracking the pigeons, and that's when he saw a peregrine falcon. And Rod, he was of the old school, where he felt that the government had nothing to do with private industry, and he felt completely justified in protecting his interests, you know, against the government. And so Rod got himself a shotgun, which had plenty of them, and he went down there, and he decided he was going to protect his pigeons against those peregrine falcons. Well, the Forest Service didn't agree, and I think that was about the time that Rod ended up in prison. But he didn't actually get arrested for killing any of the falcons, but he got arrested for having a run-in with a Forest Service employee and nearly killing him. But Rod's pigeons did continue to carry the film and were successful for many years until, with only a small attrition rate to peregrine falcons, until I think he eventually sold it.
I like old corrals and sagebrush, ponderosa pines.
That's Charlie Thomas from Jackson. The piece was produced by Cordelia Zars. Okay, next we'll hear from Dawn Senior Trask. She grew up in a cabin her father built outside of Saratoga. Dawn grew up drawing her animal friends, and she later worked as an artist in schools for rural communities in Wyoming and South Dakota. Dawn reflects on the role nature played in her ability to express herself creatively.
When I was 3, my brother took me on my first real horseback ride, and we went galloping through the sagebrush, racing jackrabbits and watching eagles soaring above us, and I was just hooked from that moment on, and grew up with all my ranch girlfriends, and we were constantly out with our horses, exploring the mountains and seeing the wildflowers and having all kinds of adventures. And we'd pretend to be Indian girls, or we'd pretend to be outlaws, or in fact, when I was 4, that was my main goal in life, was to be a bandit. Yeah. In fact, I stole my neighbor girl's rocking horse, I'm afraid to say. So I was a horse thief when I was about 4. But anyway, yeah, horses were just in our minds constantly. It's all we ever thought about. Horses and other wild animals. We were embedded in great herds of mule deer and pronghorns. I could look out the window and see a herd of 300 antelope out there, and great herds of mule deer migrated down through the area in the wintertime, and I got to know every chipmunk and every gopher anywhere around and gave them all names and knew all their family lineages. And I wanted to tell a little bit about my teenage years, because my father taught me at home and my mother taught me also. My father had actually 3 degrees, including one from the National Academy School of Fine Art in New York City. And he was also a writer and a philosopher, and so I learned a lot studying with him. And also, I explored a lot on my own. I learned to know the deer as individuals, and I learned to follow the trails of all the wild animals, even the jackrabbits, and to know the birds and all their habits and personalities. And I worked really hard to develop my abilities in art and writing. And we kind of worry that the younger kids are so involved with technology that they won't appreciate the beauties of the world that we grew up with. You know, I grew up without electricity, without television. And so I was able to enjoy all the details and all the drama of the actual world around me. And sometimes in my artist in schools, I would find similar kids. And I remember there was particularly one girl who was talking to me about how her friends didn't understand her because she liked to spend her time up on a cliff overlooking the river watching the deer go by. And when I got home from that residency, this poem came into my head. And this is what I had to say to her. This is a poem I wrote called Future to a Young Wyoming Poet. Trust to the sky, your wide, unpeopled years, like a wild lake unrippled all the long dawn. Those clouds, towering the first inch into infinity, will be your heroes, your companions, when you sit in the dirt digging wild onions, gathering sour mountain sorrel in the silence of this life. Someday, the sky will give you back your thoughts, filled with wind and light.
That's Saratoga resident Don Senior Trask. The piece was produced by Cordelia Zars. Now, Laramie County Community College professor Eric Quadi remembers how his grandfather got on the wrong side of an angry grizzly bear.
My mom's dad was attacked by a grizzly bear. He was hunting in Cody, Wyoming, and he had got off his horse and was tracking an elk. They were elk hunting, and he says he, you know, looked over and saw a cub grizzly, and thought, I'm in danger, and he swung around, and he was in between the mother and the cub. And so she charged, and he got off a shot, but the gun was knocked from him about the same time. And he still had that gun, and he showed me, and the stock is broken from that one swing by the butt is kind of snapped, and you can see a little gouge maybe where a claw got it. The mother is about to go on him, you know. His horse runs away, and that peripheral vision of like something in flight grabs the grizzly bear, and so like the grizzly bear chases the horse away. So my grandpa's there, and he's kind of collecting himself, and he's worried about his horse now, and now he's tracking his horse through the woods trying to find the horse. The horse got away, so the horse saved his life, and that horse I know was probably the most well taken care of horse the rest of its life.
Grizzlies walking upright. Grizzlies walking upright.
That was Eric Quadi. He teaches mathematics at Laramie County Community College. The piece was produced by Adrian Shirk. We'll finish up with a story from Bert Rains. Bert is a distinguished naturalist in Jackson Hole, and he tells the story of how he became interested in wildlife. Bert has published many books about nature, and he continues to write a column titled Far Afield in the Jackson Hole News and Guide newspaper. Fellow Jackson resident Rebecca Huntington interviews him.
I'm Rebecca Huntington, and I'm a freelancer, and I cover a lot of environmental issues here in Jackson.
I'm Bert Rains, and not quite sure why I'm here.
How long have you been writing your newspaper column?
I think basically started in 1976.
How would you describe your column? It's not just about nature. You sprinkle a lot of different things in there.
No, the title is Far Afield, so I can cover pretty much anything I want to. I don't just restrict myself to nature, but predominantly it's a nature column. People seem to like it. People seem to enjoy talking about birds. Surveys around here, the most recent one I can remember, and it was done twice, said that 85% of the people living here come here for the wildlife. Birders seem to be pretty nice people. Nature watchers are pretty nice folks.
What was the first bird sighting that you had that really made you fall in love with birding?
It was an osprey. I had no idea what it was. I had snuck down to the edge of a creek in upper New York State, where we lived then, to see if I could not scare the deer when they came to drink. I counted myself skillful if they didn't detect me. And suddenly this object falls out of the sky, making a big splash close enough that I actually felt some of the droplets, and emerged from the water with a pretty good-sized bass. Well, you have to find out what that is.
Where did your love of nature come from?
My wife, Meg Rains. I was a city kid, and she had rural roots. She taught me everything. Did a good job, I thought. Grew up on the mean streets of Jersey City, New Jersey, with very little opportunity to get out and away from the streets. And it wasn't until I went to college and away from home that I knew anything much different than that. I think I knew about the West probably when I was 7 or 8 years old, starting to read copiously. And then I went away to school.
How did you and Meg meet?
Well, in those days, those long gone days, we were tall people. She was a 6'1½". That happens all the time now, but it didn't happen all the time then. And I was tall. And I saw this tall woman running around with a bunch of little girls, half her size. I had to meet her. So I met her. And she snagged me.
Like that osprey catching that fish.
Pretty much. Head first. And then we lived in upstate New York, Schenectady, and the opportunities there to getting out in the backcountry were good. And fell in with a bad crowd of people that went out on weekends and had sleepovers and could lie in their tents, and before they even got out in the morning could hear and identify 30 birds. And then you had to say, how did you do that? And, you know, it just downhill from there.
How did you guys end up in Jackson Hole?
I had read about Jackson Hole when I was a kid in books, National Geographic, and always wanted to see the Tetons. So on our first real vacation, we drove out here. And we came at just the wrong time. It was mosquito time. We never saw the whole mountain range because of clouds and showers. But we fell in love with the people. It's, for us, was the easiest place to make acquaintances we've ever lived. And I believe remains so to the day. An easy place to make a friendship.
So you're known for loving nature, but really the people are just as important, it sounds like.
You bet.
Do you ever meet city kids coming and getting their first taste of nature?
I used to have some classes for the Teton Science Schools on birds. And it's very fun to open somebody's eyes the way mine were open. It's rewarding. You can sit there and see him get the spark and think, there, I've ruined another life. They're going to be bird watchers. Satisfying.
When you write your newspaper columns, do you do those on the computer now?
Oh, no. I don't type. These infernal machines called computers, which are instruments of the devil, certainly, are easy for some to use and not easy for others. I have a hell of a time with them.
Well, Bert, thank you for sharing your bird watching and other chronicles with us.
Oh, I haven't told you about my desire when we came here to become the town drunk.
What happened?
I saw the competition.
That's Jackson resident Bert Raines talking with Rebecca Huntington. Cordelia Zars produced the piece. And that's it for this edition of Wyoming Stories. We have a new podcast on the first Monday of each month. You can find lots more Wyoming Stories online at wyomingpublicmedia.org. Our theme music was written by Jeff Troxell. Anna Rader is our web editor. Cordelia Zars produced the podcast. And big thanks to her for all the great work over the past several months. Cordelia has been instrumental in editing many of the Wyoming stories you've heard and making the project a success. And as she heads back to college in Maine this fall, we wish her all the best. I'm Micah Schweitzer. Wyoming Stories is a production of Wyoming Public Media.